Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hello, welcome to Billboard.com's Chartbeat podcast. I'm Gary Trust, Billboard's co-director of charts here in New York City, and this is our first episode. Very excited, and thank you for listening. So I also edit Billboard's Chartbeat blog and have since 2009, and if you're familiar, that's where Billboard's entire charts department covers all the news of what's on our various charts, different formats. Also with Billboard's other co-director of charts, who's a big part of that, Keith Caulfield. And you may know Keith from Billboard.com's Pop Shop podcast, which he hosts with Katie Atkinson. So what we do in Chartbeat is look at not only what's on Billboard's charts, like the Billboard Hot 100 Songs chart, the Billboard 200 Albums chart, but also why. What exactly makes songs and albums hits? So that's exactly what the goal of this podcast is going to be. Why what's on the charts is on the charts. So in upcoming episodes, we plan to talk to people you might not see front and center, like the artists themselves on hits, but people who are also very responsible for how hits happen. We'll be chatting with decision makers at record labels, radio programmers, air talent, streaming service executives, songwriters, producers, publicists, a lot more people in the industry, and really just take an inside look at the steps it takes for songs, albums, and artists to get on Billboard charts. So should be hopefully educational, informational, and hopefully fun. And also, before we go any further, just a big thank you to singer-songwriter Sarah J for our theme music. We have an actual exclusive theme song. Very, very excited about that. So let's get started with the very first Billboard Chartbeat podcast. And when the idea came about to have this podcast, there was really no question for me who I wanted to be the first guest. It's the person who created the Chartbeat column in Billboard back in the March 28, 1981 issue, Paul Grine. Paul, welcome to the podcast as our first guest.
Thank you, Gary. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. Honored to have you as our first guest. Read your work for years, and I figured what better place to start the Chartbeat podcast than the person who started Chartbeat all those years ago. So let's I want to get into a lot about your career as a very distinguished journalist, a music lover, a few decades to go through of that, really a fun history for you. But let's just start, Paul, with how Chartbeat actually started. We're going to do this for me and all the other chart geeks who have read the column, loved your work for years. 1981, March 1981, it premieres. What exactly happened that the Chartbeat column started in Billboard?
I had been writing for Billboard in various capacities for 6 years at that point. So I had covered the charts that whole time, but not in the format of Chartbeat, where it's in one home that you can look forward to every week. Right. And in January of 81, a new editorial team came in. Adam White, who was the editor, and Irv Lichtman, who was the deputy editor. And they obviously were aware of me and gave me the shot. They asked, would you like to do this? Would you like to, you know, kind of create something where it can be in a consistent place every week? And obviously I jumped at it.
Right.
And came up with the name, and we just kind of plunged in.
So how'd you come up with the name Chartbeat?
Well, I remember sitting in my apartment at the time and probably had a page or two of possibilities. And that one just seemed to, you know, it's catchy. It's quick. And the charts do have a rhythm and a life. They are dynamic. And records surge to life and records die. And so that heartbeat analogy seemed apropos.
Oh, that's great. And it's kind of interesting to me that Billboard started in 1894 and the Hot 100 started in 1958. It's kind of funny in some ways to think that it took that long for the editorial staff to think, geez, we should probably be looking at some of these chart feats that happen every week. We could have been doing that when the Beatles and Elvis were having hits years earlier.
Yes. I agree. It was something that really didn't exist at all until 75 is when I first went up to Billboard as I was still a UCLA college student. I was in my junior year, and there really was no editorial content related to the charts. And there was in the February 1st, 1975 issue, a little one-paragraph item saying, Elton John's Greatest Hits LP remains the number one product on Billboard's chart for the 11th consecutive week. It's been quite some time since an artist stayed up in the top spot so long. And I wrote a letter to the director of charts, Bill Wardlow, and said, actually, it's its 10th week at number one. It's not the 11th. It's not the 11th week. And you're right, though, it has been quite some time. It's been since Tapestry, which was 4 years before. And so he got my letter, and he was, I guess, impressed that, God, he knows more about it than we do. So he walked me over to Elliot Teagle, who was the managing editor. And within a few months, I was contributing chart stuff for the magazine, some of which were branded as Chart Talk, which was sort of a forerunner to Chartbeat, but it wasn't the weekly thing that it came to be, and you need to have that weekly consistency for something to really catch on.
Right. Well, if we had had the internet back then, it obviously would have been so obvious, the appetite that people had for this kind of chart trivia. Did you know at the time that that was something that really interested other people? Was it just you really liking those kind of details that made you so excited about it? Little combination of both?
It made me excited. Obviously, AT40 started in 1970.
Right.
And that same year, Joel Whitburn's books took off. So I wasn't alone. I worked at AT40 also in the summer of 75, that pivotal year in my life, as just a production coordinator, but I got to know the team over there. And so I think Casey and AT40 did a great deal to popularize the Billboard charts and to bring people into the excitement of what the charts are all about.
Right. That was one of the things we mentioned when Casey passed away not that long ago, that everyone at Billboard really owes him such a degree of gratitude for how he really gave Billboard a voice, because that's how so many people learned about the charts. And it sounds like you too, Paul. That was a big part of your musical upbringing, listening to Casey and then being a part of the show.
It was. I listened, you know, when I was 16, you know, to AT40 every week, and I'm still listening to AT40 every week with Ryan doing it. So I've come a long way.
Well,
I still love listening to AT40 every week, and I think it's important to keep up. And there's still a lot of great records out every week. As a listening experience, it's very much like it was all those years ago.
Yeah, it's a little more lifestyle driven now, a little more celebrity driven. You know, Casey didn't have interviews like he does now, but I think it's great that it's evolved to the point where it does include that, because that's a big part of what music is now. There's such that celebrity element of what's going on, and Ryan's, you know, maybe the biggest name in entertainment, all his various media. So what a great voice and face to have for American Top 40 nowadays.
Get him on the podcast.
If he has a free moment, might have to be at 4 a.m. at some point. we'll find out. But yeah, we'll get more. I want to get more into your personal music taste, Paul, as we go along here on the first Chartbeat podcast for Billboard.com. Let me ask you about that first column. There was a little blurb in Billboard that a new feature had started called Chartbeat. That was the headline, new feature, colon, Chartbeat. And what's interesting, and we still go by this motto, basically, when we write all our chart stories today for Billboard.com, for Billboard Magazine, that we're not just saying what's on the charts. We're not just saying this is number one for X number of weeks, because as that first story said, 1981, it's not just a laundry list of the week's prime movers. They can be gleaned easily from the charts themselves. It's more to look at a perspective and really get into why things are happening on the charts or different trends, whether it's about different styles or something a record label has accomplished or an artist. So it really seems like you had this real vision for what the column should be, not just a chart highlights, but really let's look at some of the how and why behind the charts.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Well, thank you. That was always the idea. I'm looking back at that first one. It was the week that Blondie's Rapture shot to number one. Rapture captures summit for Blondie and Chapman, Mike Chapman being their producer.
Right.
So that was obviously the lead item, all the ins and outs of that. And then for the second item, I looked at the top of the album chart where three rock bands were holding down the top three spots: REO, Speedwagon, Styx, and Rush. So that was worthy of note. Over the next several weeks, it grew and got longer and more in depth. But the basic format of what it would come to be was all right there.
Did you talk to readers early on? Did you get feedback? Did you just think this is what I think it should be and what people are probably interested in? I mean, there was no email back then, so it was a matter of people sending letters, I guess, after the column had become established. How'd the direction go early on?
I did get letters, and I collected them usually under in a paragraph called "We Get Letters."
Right, right.
People actually had to, you know, put a stamp on it and take it to the mailbox, and it's a different era. So they were invested in you know, at least whatever a stamp was back then, 25 cents or something. They were invested in the column literally. Now, you know, anybody can just hit send as an email. It's a little less of an investment.
Yeah, it's a little different now. When we write stories, we have the comment section under all our chart stories, which is generally great because we find out maybe we even missed a fact. If we got something slightly wrong, people are quick to point out, Rihanna was featured on this song. You didn't mention that. So we're always just amazed at how readers are so knowledgeable. It just always points out that these are Billboard charts, but they're everybody's charts, and we're just sort of steering the ship for everyone going along. along on the musical ride. And it's, you know, to me, I'm sure you felt the same way. It's kind of an honor to be the ones presenting that information, because music is just such a big part of people's lives.
Yeah, I agree. And I also agree how smart the readers are. And I was always amazed at what they came up with and what they knew, because it wasn't, you know, their job to keep on top of all of this. And they were just so well informed and witty and found the humor in it. And I'm sure you're having the same experience.
Yeah, and you mentioned humor. That's one of the things, too, that I think we all noticed, that on the surface, writing about numbers and statistics could get kind of dry if you treated it that way. And I think it's kind of important to keep it a fun read, because it's music. It's fun. And that's one thing I always noticed when I read Chartbeat, when you were writing the column, that there always was kind of a winking humor to a lot of what you wrote. That was just your personal style that, hey, we should have some fun with this.
Well, thanks. I always kind of viewed the column as a meal, that you should have meat and potatoes in there. It shouldn't all be, lemon meringue pie.
Right.
But you should have some dessert at the end of your meal. So I tried to balance it and have important meaty stuff and also stuff, something at the end just for fun.
So you started to do the column, and the idea was there from the edit staff, and you start running with it. Was there any worries that, wow, there might come a week where the number one song is the same? There's no new number one album on the Billboard 200. There's no big debuts. Was there ever fear that, how am I going to fill this blank space every week?
No, that never happened. There's, there are obviously weeks where all hell breaks loose on the charts.
Right.
And then there are weeks where less happens, but there's always plenty to write about. Maybe you can catch up on some ideas that you've had for a while that you didn't have room for. The second week that I did it, April 4th, I had my first theme column, or a secondary column about... Smokey Robinson's Being With You became Motown's 88th number one. So he also had written the first one by the Miracles, so I traced that. And then a few weeks after that, I had my first list, which I did periodically, lists in the column. And that was of the top 15 solo Beatle hits. So within the first couple of months, a lot of the features that I would come back to, at least we got started with.
And you said that you got a lot of letters. Was response good internally as well? The editors were pretty happy with how it was going?
Yes. Yeah, I think everybody, it filled a niche. Like you say, it should have been there all along. It should have been there back in the Beatles years and the Elvis years. It would have been great. I give a lot of credit to Joel Whitburn for everything, but he had periodic columns that were ads, but in the early 70s, before Chartbeat came along, even before I came along to Billboard, he would have essentially chart columns, maybe one every two or three months, and talking about Elton John's album or, you know, a few different things. And
yeah,
it was to promote his books, but it also reflected that basic idea.
Yeah, he has been a great partner with Billboard. I actually had the pleasure of interviewing him a couple times, including 2014, when it was Billboard's 120th anniversary. He's still up in Wisconsin doing all those great Billboard reference books. If you go to recordresearch.com, you can see all the different books that Joel publishes. There's an online subscription where you can get all Billboard chart history for so many different charts. Joel is still going really strong, still a huge music fan. And he's got, I've never been there, but he's got a basement full of every song that's ever charted on the Hot 100, going back to 1958. So not sure you get a bigger music fan than Joel. So he's great. It's great that you're able to use his information from that. And you're talking about the rhythm of the charts. So much is cyclical. When I talked to Joel last in 2014, Paul, we were saying at that time how women were ruling the charts. It was all Meghan Trainor and Taylor Swift having a record run at number one. And Joel was saying how, right, that's, you know, the Supremes had had a big run in the 60s and Donna Summer in the 70s and some other female artists. So we see a lot of trends come and go. And I actually quoted you recently when we had this run. We're in the middle of it now of 9 in a row non-American artists, number one on the Billboard Hot 100. It's been 9 months of number ones by acts from England and other countries. Rihanna is from Barbados. Drake is from Canada. So you know, we're looking back. Is this a record? 9 in a row. And it didn't take long before I wound up back in our bound volumes that we have here in our New York office that I was reading a Chartbeat column written by Paul from 1985 where it was 8 in a row that it hit number one. So it's funny how much stuff, you know, we still go back to the work that you did. We should all thank you here at Billboard for helping us out and doing some work, even each week for us now, because we come up with these records and see, you know, when the last time something happened, and then we can look back in an old column, and you've already done that original work. It's amazing how much change is the only constant when it comes to rock history.
Thanks, Gary. I agree, too, that everything is cyclical in music, and patterns keep repeating. And when Cake by the Ocean, you know, is in the top 10 now, I was thinking, oh, it's the first Cake song since AWB's Cut the Cake.
Right.
Now, we could do, you know, the history of pastry double entendres.
But. Well, we've been joking recently, too, with 7 Years by Lucas Graham. There's Cake by the Ocean and there's a Graham. Cake and Graham, both in the top 10. and Lucas Graham is a Danish pop band, so we've got Danishes too.
And evidently, that's his name. There's the lead singer and the group. And
yes.
Christopher Cross was, you know, the lead singer and a group for a time.
Right.
Now we think of him as a solo artist, but yeah. So everything comes around.
Yeah, it's got to be. I think it's one of those things, sort of like sports, how you know you wind up following the music. In sports the same way, because maybe you learned it from your parents. So, you know, as much as listening to music, liking trivia about music is a personal thing, it's also bonding. You know, you're not just in a vacuum. Maybe some of these fun facts are things you've talked about with families and friends. So it's again, I always go back to what a human element it is, what we're writing about.
I agree. Also, politics. You know, there are a lot of statistics related to politics. We're in an election year, and you hear a lot of the commentators say everybody who's won Iowa and New Hampshire has gone on to be the nominee. You know, that they have to know their stats the same way music, you know, chart people do and sports writers do.
Right.
Every field, there's a desire to quantify and to create order and make things definitive or orderly in all fields, and we're lucky that certainly is true in music.
Yeah, we're competitive people as a country or as a species, I guess, right? We want to know what's number one.
Right.
And what's the most number one of all the number ones? So if you know, Rihanna's number one, where does she rank against the Beatles and Mariah Carey? We always kind of want to keep taking it another step to see who's the best of the best.
Yes.
All right, let's take it back to the really early beginning, Paul, even before Billboard. Was young Paul a music fan? Were you a writing fan early on? Where did your love of music and writing begin?
Actually, I was not a early music fan. I was 16 before I got into music in 1971. So for somebody who's made it his life's work, that's kind of late, I think. I think most people who are like, when did you get into it?
No, I was going to say it's actually similar. I was a big sports fan until about 14. And then that's when I almost overnight got into music. So that was 1988, still my favorite year of music. So, you know, I've read too that people say that right around when you're starting high school, that's the music you feel the most intensely and maybe you take with you for the rest of your life. So maybe that isn't that strange or that uncommon.
I think that's true, that for everybody, the music where they were coming of age and kind of finding themselves will always deep down in their heart be their favorite music all their life, whatever, right. whether it was the big band era or the disco era or today, you know. So I was 16 and discovered all at once American Top 40, Carole King, It's Too Late, The Carpenters, Rainy Days and Mondays, just astoundingly good records, and everything else that was out that spring and summer. And it was like my life in many ways went from black and white to color, because the music was just so rich and emotional and resonant. And I'm lucky, I think, that I've always loved music. There are still records I love. I know a lot of people, you know, kind of tune out and, you know, don't stay tuned into music. Right. They loved what they loved back then, but they think everything's gone, you know, bad since they were into it. Or the other way around. They loved the current stuff and, couldn't care less about the old stuff. And I've loved all eras from the start.
So take us through a few different eras. Would you like in the 80s? Would you like more in the 90s? What are some of your favorites of now?
Now, I think Adele's terrific, and The Weeknd. Selena Gomez is a very good singer. I was happy to see Justin Bieber have a comeback, because I thought he was good when he had As Long As You Love Me and Beauty and the Beat. He's a good singer, and we, as you know, I'm sure, build up our artists and then, tear them down. And it's a tough business for artists, because these are people and these are sensitive people. They have to be artists. And, he really took a beating, and I'm glad that he was strong enough I'm talking about Justin Bieber now, to come out of it. I've been doing this long enough that, I wrote about Michael Jackson when he was, red hot. And then I had the surreal experience of writing about him again when I was writing a similar column for Yahoo Music.
Right.
After he died. And it was the strangest thing that every week he was setting records just as he'd been doing in 1983, one of the strangest experiences. And I wrote about Whitney when she was hot and then after she died. So you do get a sense how difficult pop music is for artists, and they really have to be strong to survive the inevitable cold spells and down periods. And a lot of them, aren't able to.
I would think, it's hard to compare eras, but maybe now it's even harder than before, when you kind of have to live, it's so much more of a public life with Twitter and Facebook and Instagram, and just everyone kind of wanting to know where you are at any moment. And I always think, sure, Taylor Swift has, if you think about it, the greatest life, all these big friends, gets to go around the world, do shows, but it's probably on the other side. That's a lot of work. She's constantly... there's never really a break from the career side of things. And when you think of it that way, it's kind of hard to imagine. Most of us are never going to know what that's like, but there is that whole side of it.
Yeah, it's true. I think you're right that it's probably harder now than ever, because there's so much media and there's so much constant exposure, and they want that. That's their dream and their goal, to be famous and have everybody talking about them. But be careful what you wish for sometimes.
Yeah, and it's also good. It used to be if you went away, if you did an album and then maybe you didn't record another one for 2 or 3 years, you almost had to start completely over with your fan base, because newer listeners would have come in. There was no way to really follow what you'd been doing. Now I think it's easier to kind of carry that downtime, and that probably is the biggest benefit for artists now versus in the past, that they can continue that whole dialogue with their fans and keep that profile. And then when new music comes out, it's not like they've been away that long. And you can also put a song online in between albums. You could never do that before. So there is a big benefit that way for artists.
Right. I agree.
Any favorite artists you've ever met? Were you pretty much always just cooped up in the Billboard office and didn't get out? Did you get to go to shows a lot when you were writing Chartbeat? Always on deadline? Any people you really remember, really good memories with?
I did go to concerts. They actually let me out occasionally. And
we don't get to do that much. It must have been easier back then.
We had it soft. And I interviewed a lot of these people. I was talent editor for a few of those years, 84 to 86, I think.
Oh, okay.
So I interviewed, Carol King and Bacharach and David and Michael Jackson and Donna Summer and a lot of my favorites, which was a thrill.
What was interviewing Michael Jackson like right after Thriller? That's the era we're talking about.
No, it was before that. It was in between. It was when Rock With You was out.
Oh, okay.
It was at his house in Encino. He did very few interviews. It was before he became as massively big as he would become.
Right.
But he was obviously pretty big just off the Wall and Don't Stop Till You Get Enough. Shy. Very sensitive. Again, he was talking about how he was talking in much more emotional terms than artists generally do in an interview. And I think he came to the decision that he didn't want to do. He didn't do any interviews during Thriller with anyone because he would rather have a mystique than give it all away in an interview. And so he built a mystique where he was kind of unknowable, kind of Howard Hughes-ish.
And that's kind of what Adele has done with her latest album. She doesn't tweet that much. She actually kind of did go away for a couple of years. We didn't really hear anything from her. She started a family. But, coming off the biggest album of all time, which we actually ranked the biggest Billboard 200 albums of all time last year in 21, was number one based on chart performance. So she's actually the rare artist who still kind of values that mystique that, again, it's just so much harder to have nowadays. But another example of how some artists go back to how some of the greats before them tried to be in the spotlight or not be in the spotlight as much as they wanted.
Yes, you make a good point how she stands out in many ways. Including the fact that she doesn't have to play the game as much as most artists do, the fame game. She can take time off and 'cause she's really good. She has a more legitimate talent than a lot of people with that voice.
So you did Chartbeat through 1992, Paul, and then you covered, as you said, Yahoo Music. You did Chartwatch. Where did one thing I think I haven't asked you yet is where did that love of writing, that clever turn of phrase that you always use in your writing, where did that come from? Was it part of your education, your upbringing? Did you read a lot? Where did the writer in you develop?
That's a good question. I remember in junior high, an English teacher said complimented me on my writing. And I never really had an outlet for it. I didn't work on the school paper in either high school or college.
Oh.
But as I started to tell you, in my junior year at UCLA, I majored in communication studies. I started going up to Billboard, and they, were happy to have me do some freelance writing and writing about what was happening on the charts and so forth. So I did that. And I have to give credit to Bill Wardlow, who was the chart director, Elliot Teagle, who was the managing editor. And Elliot, when I was maybe 23 or so, and I was probably on staff by this point, I was working on a story where I mentioned the Doobie Brothers, and I wrote B-R-O-S. And he came back to my desk and said, is this how this is supposed to be stylized, B-R-O-S? Because Warner Brothers, the record company, is B-R-O-S.
Right.
But, I remember thinking, you can't be serious. There's not one person who's going to be confused about this. But I humored him and called. And, of course, he's right. It is Brothers spelled out. And it changed my life in a way because I never wanted to be, caught up short again. And he's right that everything is right or it's wrong, you know, and no detail is too small to get right.
Right.
And so to this day, you know, if I don't remember if it's Captain and Tennille or the Captain and Tennille, and is it and or an ampersand, you know, I'll look it up. And I'm still in touch with Elliot, you know, mostly through email. And I reminded him of this story a few years ago and had a chance to thank him for it. Because it was a small thing, it was, you know, but it made a big impact on me. And no matter what you're writing about, you should aim to get it as close to perfect as you can. And anybody who doesn't think it matters, you know, whether it's Brothers or BROS, is in the wrong field. Either journalism or writing, as you and I do about the charts, you know, you have to get all those details right.
I totally agree with that. Does it make you sad in some ways when you see how writing online is so much more casual now, the way people now write? It's almost like, you know, texts in some ways. We've seen it in music. We see hashtags in song titles now. And what a reflection of how society changes. But I think there's always going to be people who respect the rules of writing. And, you know, as long as you're getting your main points across, that's the main thing. But I think there is an art that should be respected about trying to say things as clearly, as accurately, and accurately as possible.
I like the speed of online.
Right.
The fact that something can be up immediately. In the 70s, before Chartbeat, there was a newsletter that Billboard published called Hotline. And I wrote the chart commentary for Hotline. It was an advanced look at the Hot 100 and the album chart and probably one or two other charts, and then some chart commentary, and it was stapled together and went out in the mail on Wednesday, and subscribers would get it by about Friday. And that was what passed for, you know, speedy delivery back then, because it was obviously before the internet.
Right.
And that was guaranteed to get to them before the regular issue, which would probably arrive on Monday. So now, you know, within, you know, as soon as the chart's finalized, the column is online.
Right.
And, you know, it's a little, so there are pluses and minuses to the speediness and informality of putting things online.
And the good thing about online is not that we ever make a mistake, but if we ever do make a mistake, we can fix it. But not that ever happens.
Never. It's easier to fix.
Well, that's great, Paul. Thank you so much, really, just for taking some time. I you know, I'm a huge chart geek. I say that proudly. I know so many people who read Billboard Army. We have so much coverage of all different things in the music business, and Billboard.com has just, you know, evolved to be such a great website with video and song premieres and reviews and just so many different angles. But yeah, I think a lot of people still just love the charts. They still love reading about all the different records, and we should just all know that you're the person that started that. So again, there was just no one else. I wanted to be the first guest for the first Chartbeat podcast here on Billboard.com. And we should close, Paul, with the famous quote you always said at the end of the year in Chartbeat. You always wrote in that last one in December, your bit of poetry about the charts and life. Let's bring that back for everybody.
May you always have a star on the chart of life. Which was the star, you know, was before the bullet. Now I think they're called bullets.
There you go.
Yes. Well, thank you. Wow, you were a reader.
So many of us who work here, Trevor Anderson, who's one of the younger members of our department, he first wrote in to the Ask Billboard mailbag that I do for Billboard.com. He had a question or two that I answered, and then I talked to him while he was in college. He wanted some advice about the charts, and now he's working for us. So, sometimes we get the big chart fans, me, Trevor, you, we wind up coming through here. So it's a great community. It's just cool to know that around the world there are people who love all the details of music like this, and it's all good. It's all fun. It's all win-win. We're just talking music. It's not nothing bad can happen. If we make a mistake, we make a mistake. But at the end of it all, it's music and charts. It's just all fun things that enrich our lives.
I agree. Well said.
Paul Grine, thank you so much for coming on the very first Billboard Chartbeat podcast.
Thanks, Gary. I had a good time.
Let the medicine, the music get to you. Life been so bad at all. You live it up the wall.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Winning is an everyday mindset, and we're here to help. I'm Craig Robinson. Join me and Coach John Calipari for ways to win. We're kicking off during March Madness. Cal's Kentucky Wildcats are in the hunt. So throughout the tournament, I'm going to call up my friend to ask about his wins, losses, and especially what he's telling his players in the locker room.
You got to win every day.
Find the Ways to Win podcast anywhere you listen.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.